Extra, extra, extra! Welcome to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, where one kind of expert and one total newbie watch Revolutionary Girl Utena and talk about it for your enjoyment. Hi, I'm Randy.
And I am Jared.
Hey, Jared, how are you doing? What is new with you?
What's new? Just living the anime life. Living the
there
anime life, watching anime with you, Randy, getting a feel for the 90s anime that I so love, but somehow missed Utena when I was growing up. So here it is in my life.
And I get to experience it with you, which is great. New with me, been a couple of weeks. So I recently finished watching the original Dragon Ball anime for the first time.
What?
Which is, I know, I've never done it. I've read the manga before, and I'd seen the anime up through the Muscle Tower arc, and then I just dropped off there. But now I've seen it all the way through, all 153.
153. I feel like I have that many episodes left in Super. So,
well, there's only 133 of those. So,
well, I'll let you know. I watched episode one of Dragon Ball earlier this year, and then I stopped.
Well, I recently discovered something thanks to a friend of mine. If you're into this sort of thing, there is a fan recut of the original Dragon Ball that basically edits it down to just manga stuff. So it is down from 153 episodes to, I believe, 86, which is a bit more manageable.
This sounds suspicious. This sounds like Dragon Ball Kai.
It does kind of, but unlike that, this is using the same footage, using the same voice acting, the same music, and it's just re-edited, and it's expertly done. I definitely think they have a lot of experience doing this, because I gave a few episodes a shot, and I'm like, this is incredible, and the editing and the pacing is great. So,
well, Randy, I already know that you do a Dragon Ball podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Already, but I think we should just start our own, and, you know, let's just start watching Dragon Ball now, do live reactions. It'll be great, you know, and then we'll watch Utena too. You know, we'll talk about that for about 5 minutes and just keep it going.
So you want me to do three podcasts at the same time and my free time and I'm not getting paid for it? That's hard.
Well, you just need to make it your full-time job and everything will be good.
You can be my boss and you can pay me. How does that sound?
I have to work 8 hours a day at least myself.
Okay.
So after that, sure, I'll give you $1 per episode.
It's about what Spotify pays me for the other shows that I do. So
that sounds great.
But no, yeah.
I mean, I'm here for Revolutionary Podcast Utena.
Right.
That's what I'm here for.
Exactly. And just so that everybody knows, I mean, granted, this is our second episode. Hopefully you are listening in order. But for the purpose of this show, we are going to be going through the whole show and the film. For that, when we get there, and there's going to be spoilers as we go along. We aren't going to spoil things ahead of time. I'm just saying we're not going to not talk about events when we get to like the last episode. Like, otherwise, it'd be like, and then we watch the last episode.
No,
it was.
I like to be as suspiciously quiet as possible when it comes to information, just like how this series gives us the most basic info, such as character names and the power of Dios. They don't tell us what any of this is, but they did tell us that we're going to smash the world's shell and that we're getting letters from End of World.
That's
so
right.
That's all you need. You know, those aren't spoilers. Those are just,
no, not yet.
Just blanket spoilers.
We'll get to more spoilery things as the show progresses, but if you'd like to watch the show, if either you've never seen it or you have seen it but it's been a while, I'm gonna tell you some places that you could watch it. If you would like to, it is all up on Nozomi Entertainment's YouTube channel, except for the movie, that is in Japanese with subtitles. It's also available on Funimation now, and as of today recording, November 3rd 2021, it's up on Crunchyroll. So if you have Crunchyroll, if you're a subscriber there, you can go and binge the whole show. And I suggest you do, because it's excellent. Otherwise, of course, you can pick up the Blu-rays that were released by Nozomi Entertainment. And you can find those on Right Stuff, Amazon, wherever you buy your anime.
But here's the real question. Crunchyroll have the film?
That's a good question. I'll have to take a look and we'll find out.
That is the trivia for the day, is where can we stream the film, which we're supposed to watch that after the series.
After.
Okay, well, I watched it last night, so.
Well, Wow, I'm sure you were very confused.
No, just kidding. Just kidding. Must have been all those episodes we just watched.
Right, exactly. We did more than last time. So last episode of this podcast, we watched the first two of the series. So this time, we wanted to stick with like two episodes, but episode three, fine. Episode four is the part one of a two-parter. So we did three episodes. So
that's right. And I remember I got confused because it said at the end of episode three, to be continued. And I thought, it's the beginning of a two-parter. And then I realized they had nothing to do with each other. And it was actually episodes four and five.
Yep, exactly. Oh, boy. But let's talk about it in order. So first off, we have episode three titled On the Night of the Ball, which aired April 16th, 1997. Jared, would you mind doing the honors and reading the events of this episode?
Sure. And here I thought you were asking me to recount what happened on April 16th, 1997 in my own life.
It could be interesting, or
I could just read what was so conveniently written here for me.
Yes, absolutely.
Episode three. Utena unintentionally unleashed the power of Dios in the last duel with Seonji, which attracted Toga's interest in her. Toga sends Utena a dress for the upcoming ball. On the other hand, Toga's sister, Nanami, thinks her brother likes Anthy. And in a fit of jealousy, she sends Anthy a water-dissolvable dress.
Yes.
Yes. Made of paper mache.
Right. Made of something.
Tissue paper.
Yeah, mere tissues. And I mean, like, I don't know about you, but if I was going to get dressed for a big ball, it's pretty strenuous. I might start to sweat a little before I get there, and I would definitely notice if my dress started to fall apart from that. But that's just me.
Yeah, especially for someone who has social anxiety, such as Anthy.
Exactly. Before we dive into all of the nitty-gritty of this episode, I want to bring up some staff, if that's okay with you.
Okay.
So this episode was storyboarded by Kazuhisa Takanouchi. He was an episode director and did storyboards for series like Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball, and Dragon Ball Z. Still doing stuff for things like Grand Blue Fantasy the Animation, and also did things for Inuyasha. It was then directed by Takashi Watanabe, who's a kind of a jack-of-all-trades guy, doing things like episode direction, animation, music, and even CGI engineering for some projects that include series like Slayers, Sword Art Online, Patlabor, One Punch Man, Lupin the Third. The list goes on. The man does a ton of things. It's wild. As ever, this episode was written by Yoji Enokido. As a reminder, he was a scriptwriter for Evangelion, Rebuild of Evangelion, Razaphon, Sailor Moon, Fooly Cooly, Gunbuster, Bungo Stray Dogs, so on and so forth. And animation supervisor was Naomi Miyata, who did character designs and chief animation for Slayers. Also did key animation in Tenchi Muyo and Ikitosen.
I have heard of all of those anime.
Well, good. So I put together the list of that I thought was the most recognizable, at least to people like me, a 33-year-old man.
Yes, they are all recognizable. I just have not seen some of them, such as Razaphon, Bungo Stray Dogs. Have you seen Gunbuster?
I have, and it's excellent. Great.
Yes.
I haven't seen Diebuster yet, though, Kochi, but I should.
Kochi. Okay, sorry. I will not start quoting other anime as we as we go.
Let's talk about this episode. So we have we've been introduced to Toga before, but this is kind of our real first introduction of who this man is. He's got long, luscious red hair, and you jokingly called him Alan Shazar from Escaflowne.
Yes, he is the Alan Shazar of the Utena universe. Yes.
Is that purely based on his looks? Is that based on his demeanor?
Well, I think what it is in Escaflowne, he grew out of this phase, but in Utena, he's got something going on, and he's only in the student council right now, right? So he's basically, he's still in high school.
Yes.
But in Escaflowne, he's graduated, he's changed, and he no longer dyes his hair red.
So, so literally the same person. Okay, interesting. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes, he is head of the student council and takes an interest in Utena, who is now part of the duels, part of the fate of the Rose Bride, but she is not part of the student council. And then we're also introduced to Nanami, who is Toga's little sister. She's blonde and has very evil eyes.
Yeah, she doesn't have evil eyes at first.
No, but she's very nice to Anthy.
That is correct. But it was all a ruse. It was all just a mystery. And then she got evil eyes. It's kind of like that song Hungry Eyes, but evil eyes. Yeah, ooh, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Give me a few more bars of evil
when
eyes.
When I see you, I've got evil eyes, Anthy. I really despise. Okay.
That was perfect. Well done.
You're welcome. Your hot anime vlogger sometimes likes to sing.
That's great. I like it. So let's, you know, besides Toga being there and being, very strange.
I have a list of notes here for episode 3.
Oh, yes, please. Let's hear your notes.
I only take notes when very important things happen. And even before Toga is even mentioned in my notes, I have it written as epic slap scene.
Oh.
Because there was an epic slap scene once again. Because there's a lot of slapping in this anime for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the comical kind. It's fairly the abusive kind.
Right.
But there's an epic slap scene. And I don't even remember who slapped who.
Well, it's, yes, it's one of the three, we'll call them mean girls of the school who slapped Anthy because after Sionji's loss, it is actually Anthy's fault that Sionji lost and he has locked himself in the kendo club and refuses to come out and spend time with them. So it's Anthy's fault for this.
And quite correctly, we have not seen him at all in any of these episodes. He must be pretty hungry in there. Do you think he ever leaves?
I assume somebody brings him food, or he doesn't eat so that he can maintain that svelte figure of his, like all these people with their long, spindly limbs.
Yes, at some point he needs to come out to dye his hair green again. So.
Exactly.
But yes, my notes for this episode are epic slap scene. Toga, he has a floral ring just like Utena.
Mm-hmm.
More slaps, more slapping. Nanami stands up for Anthy. That was the fake out, right? And then in quotes, the girl who stole my brother from me, says Nanami.
Yes.
And then I have, we skip ahead a little too, water on the dress, social anxiety from Anthy. Utena gives her a toga dress. Yes, because it's a sheet. And the dance rescue. Those are my notes.
Extensive notes for this episode about going to a ball.
Well, you have to. It's a dance.
Of course. So. Of course. I want to go back to Toga's reveal that he also has a rose seal ring.
Yes. He basically, like, he raised his hand into the sky, and the sun shone on it, and it blinded Utena for the rest of the episodes.
Well, she is wondering. He has a ring, just like the one that she has, and she got hers from a mysterious prince that showed up to console her after her parents died. So here she's wondering, is he, presumably, is he the prince who had swooped in and saved me in my darkest hour when I was younger?
He's not a very nice prince, if you ask me.
Well, she's not been exposed to much of Toga yet, so clearly she, I don't know, doesn't really know.
Well, I think that because she has so many memory issues and apparently short-term memory issues of, that was weird, like a castle just came out or a spiral staircase that took me 5 minutes to run up. That was strange. I guess it's just another normal day at this school. I think she's forgetting that from her childhood that she actually just won that ring out of a gachapon machine at an arcade. And so did everyone else in the student council. And they just so happened to have little letters inside the capsules, too, that said, 15 years from now, you will break the shell of the world and have revolutionary power. But hers was missing a letter, which is why she doesn't have one.
Well, I'm adding this to your long list of predictions for the series. This is it's all canon now.
Okay.
This whole thing is about a dance that's going to be happening, a ball that Nanami informs Anthy, stands up for and says, you know, they're just jealous because you've been nominated as the dancing queen for the ball. Anthy doesn't want to go because she doesn't like crowded spaces. She has anxiety in large crowds. But all the same, Nanami sends her a dress to wear to the ball, and Utena gets a dress sent to her as well, but this one is from Nanami's older brother Toga, who wants to see her at the ball.
Yeah, do you think he, like, handmade that dress? Do you think he made it himself?
It's not a question I had contemplated. I don't think... I think it would be hilarious to see Toga sitting there and slaving over a dress, but I assume that he's such a regal gentleman that he has people for that sort of thing.
Mm. And here's another question for you to contemplate. You said, like, Dancing Queen. Do you think there's, like, an ABBA music video of this episode somewhere out there?
I'm absolutely sure. And if my keyboard wasn't so removed from me right now, I'd be frantically putting that into YouTube to see if it exists.
Right. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, Randy, for some reason, you know, threw his keyboard across the room. It's just it's quite a scene. All these slapping scenes was just too much for Randy to handle.
No, it's not just behind my microphone and, you know, all of its accoutrement. So,
accoutrement. La revolutionary fille de power. Egg of world. So what is that? Les oeufs de le monde. Or is that? I think that's close.
I'll take your word for it.
I wouldn't, but...
We didn't do enough of a service about this last episode, so I do need to bring up a time where I almost died from this episode, which is Anthy opening the box of her dress and taking the dress out, and Choo-Choo reaches in and grabs the silica packet that's in there.
Oh, yes.
To which I was like, oh, no. And then while she's like looking at it, we see him in the background nibbling on it before the next shot we have of him is him just standing there with his eyes sunken in and foam leaving his mouth.
Yeah, poor little Choo-Choo. I felt bad for Choo-Choo for just a moment, but then he bounced back quickly somehow. I think he's a magic monkey. Did you say he's a monkey?
He is a tiny monkey.
He's a tiny monkey. He almost looks like a mouse to me sometimes.
Right.
A mouse wearing a tie with school colors.
A tie and a nice little earring. He's a very dapper gentleman. Yes, so there's a ball and everything should be fine. It's going to be a great time, great place to be. And then Anthy gets separated onto the dance floor and has a bit of an anxiety attack from all of the people around her. And here comes a waiter and he pops a bottle of champagne on her and her dress immediately starts to dissolve in front of everybody.
That was unexpected. I was not expecting it to dissolve. I was just expecting it to get wet. But then it just started disappearing, just like Kill la Kill. All these clothes just evaporating in thin air. And I did not realize we're watching a trigger anime.
Right, exactly. This is not a new edition of Nudist Beach. Rather, it's a very mean prank by Nanami, who before was the nice girl, but turns out not so much because she fears that Anthy is stealing away her older brother from her, which...
Yes. That's as she said in Japanese, the girl who stole my brother from me.
Utena does step in to save the day. She tears off her own dress and she's got her regular boys' school outfit on underneath and wraps Anthy in her dress into some sort of strange new toga dress. And then they dance. They dance in each other's arms and forget about the terrible things that have happened in the whole crowd.
I kind of forget where she got the sheet from. But it does look like a toga. And then there's two togas in this. There's toga, and then there's the toga sheet. And
yes.
I'm toga overload, but I have seen that artwork before. I feel like I've seen either fan artwork or maybe actual production artwork or something of her in that toga dress, even though it's not really a toga. It's just easy to call it that.
Right.
But
I wanted to bring up something. I was reading a different blog about these episodes, and they had pointed out something pretty interesting, that while Utena does come to Anthy's rescue here in this episode, which is all well and good, they point out that it is actually Utena's fault that all of this takes place, because Anthy, of course, invites her to come to the ball, and she's the dancing queen. Anthy says that she's not interested because it's a thing that gives her anxiety and she doesn't want to do it. To which we have the entire next scene, basically, of Utena telling her, you need to get out of your comfort zone and you need to go out and do this because this is what a person does and I'm not going to listen to what your concerns are. This is all about what I think is best for you, which then is not actually a good thing. So Utena's trying, but she's not exactly giving the best advice here, which I thought was very interesting.
I feel like that falls in line with how some of the pacing in these episodes go, that it's it can be very surface level, kind of one-liner scenes where it's not really going to build on that, but it's going to be these epic moments like near the end, regardless of how they played out earlier, where Utena just throws off that dress and she has those shoulder pads on, right? Like the ones that she's like in a duel.
Right. So, the ones that only happen when Anthy manifests them for a duel, which I thought was interesting. And I unfortunately, yes. I looked through a couple of blogs about this episode and nobody seemed to point that out or have any explanation for why they exist there.
We are the first ones to notice it. Hands down. We are
nobody
the first.
At all in the last 20 some years has noticed at all.
Yeah, we are finding new things to talk about for this series that nobody has ever thought of before.
Did I say anything before that I did the math and we're recording this November of 2021 that this spring, either the end of March or the beginning of April, 2022 will be the 25th anniversary of Utena.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're coming up at just the right time to celebrate, so that'll be great.
Yeah, that's good.
Let me read one little bit here from the director commentary for this episode. Ikuhara has something to say about each episode here, and this is straight from the Revolutionary Girl Utena 20th Anniversary Ultra Edition book that, at least in America, was bundled with the special edition Blu-ray. And for On the Night of the Ball, he says, "The basic plot of this episode was ready quite soon after planning started. I believe the thinking was, we need to bring the mood of Miss Saito's manga into this. But the truth is, you don't see cliched plot lines like this in Miss Saito's manga. The way Toga approaches Utena is almost uncomfortably stereotypical shoujo, but thanks to that, we were able to strongly impress upon the audience that this was a, quote, shoujo manga anime. Given the story's later developments, episodes like this were absolutely necessary. Production-wise, we were in disorder. In the background art meetings, we discovered that the master layout drawings, the base sketches for the backgrounds, that were supposed to have been ready, were more or less non-existent. The ashen-faced staff looked on. Mr. Kobayashi and I sketched like mad. It was an ordeal, but I think that over the course of dealing with it, the two of us were able to achieve a consensus about the direction the art should take for the rest of the series." So, it seems that production was already falling apart at episode 3.
Wow. This sounds like an episode of Shiro Bako, if you've seen that series, where they are following an anime studio and production assistants are the main characters. And you follow the production of an anime and all of the trials and tribulations. And this seems like I've seen something like it before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. So like this episode was used to kind of to figure out the look and feel for the remaining remainder of the series. Is that kind of where they're going with this? It's like a launching point almost?
Yeah. I assume because this is the first time that he and the other person that was working on it, Mr. Kobayashi, sat down and did these things themselves, probably helped them get a good idea of where they want things to head in terms of essentially the art direction for backgrounds and things like that.
Sure.
And making sure that this is seen at this has a very shoujo feel versus the first two episodes, which were, you know, there's a lot of interpersonal conflict that ended with an actual fight, which is not a thing that usually occurs in shoujo manga or anime. So this kind of like helped solidify that, yes, this is, you know, definitely has shoujo appeal to it.
Well, let me tell you the tropes of certain shoujo anime definitely shone bright, as one would say, just like that ring blinded Utena near the beginning of the episode. I was blinded by the intentional shoujo, but it's an interesting commentary of the episode versus the manga. So are they getting at the manga had taken a different tone or a different feel versus this? I mean, I guess they would do this for the anime so that it would appeal more to girls, right? And to appeal more to a wider audience, possibly.
I believe so.
Sure.
While I have not read any of the Utena manga, I've read about it, and it is a bit different than the anime. A lot of character relationships are very different. There is more of a focus on the shoujo aspects of it and not so much the battle and the intense overtones and things. So,
okay.
Yeah. I guess this is just kind of trying to make things a bit more cohesive and make each other like one like the other. It's probably a strange way of phrasing it, but...
Well, sure. Yeah. Sure. Well, at the time, they're just trying to get this series to as many viewers as possible and to get as many volumes of the manga in people's hands as possible.
Right.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Is there any, Is there anything you would like to say more about On the Night of the Ball before we move on to our next set of episodes?
Not really. It kind of felt like your kind of typical anime episode where there's jealousy and something backstabbing's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
So what's her name? Nanami. She was like your typical character that you knew was probably corrupted at the heart for some reason. Maybe she's not receiving letters from End of World, but she was supposed to. or maybe she was the Rose Bride to begin with, but we don't know. There's so many theories to come up with.
We are only three episodes deep, so I can understand you grasping for what does it all mean?
Grasping into the Utena air.
Exactly. Well, we will grasp at the next two episodes here after we take a quick break. Okay, now we're going to jump into the next two episodes. As they're a two-parter, we're going to approach them as if they are one whole cohesive story. So to let you know, the next episodes are The Sunlit Garden, Prelude, and The Sunlit Garden, Finale, which aired April 23rd and April 30th, 1997. Jared, would you again be so kind as to read what happened in Prelude?
Sure. In Prelude, Utena and Miki are about to begin a duel. The rest of the episode and the following one are a flashback to show what caused this duel to happen. Miki often plays a particular tune on the piano. He says he cannot truly play the tune as he wishes because he has lost a certain glow. Nanami thinks that Miki likes Anthy, and from jealousy, she tries to tease and harass her. Taking advantage of that, Miki makes a good friend of Anthy, and then Utena. Finding Anthy and Utena got poor grades in the previous math exam, Miki offers to tutor them. However, Nanami won't leave them alone.
Thank you very much. I will bring up this episode was storyboarded by Toru Takahashi. It was also directed by Toru Takahashi. He was the episode director of the first episode of Utena as well. Again, written by Yoji Enokido, and animation supervised by Hiromi Kato, who you might know as being an anime director for things like Beck Mongolian Chop Squad and Death Note and Kaleidostar and Guilty Crown and Angelic Lair, amongst other things.
Wow, some of those were hits and some of them wanted to be hits. Okay.
I figured I would throw Guilty Crown in there because I knew that you had watched it and you had hot takes.
I did have hot takes, or as I like to call them, hot cakes at the time. What a strong start. At least it has a good opening theme that still slaps.
There you go.
But it doesn't slap as much as Beck does as a series.
That's true.
You know, it's funny, in reading that episode synopsis for episode 4, The Sunlit Garden Prelude, that doesn't quite match the notes I took, so I was wondering, did we watch the same episode together? I remember the jealousy, but I have things written such as, Miki Kaoru, the blue-haired piano boy. And he is writing his own sad story. There are snails at home, or the snails have a home. There is a mongoose and taco taco, which is octopus. And Anthy plays the same song Miki used to play with his sister when he was a child. Well, I guess my line here about the snails having a home, the mongoose and taco taco, that's the jealousy part.
That is. And that Nanami won't leave them alone. She has many operations, which are called Operation Anthy is a Weirdo, who, and then either has snails in a pencil box, or has a snake in her desk, or keeps an octopus in her closet, to which there are many, many funny and random things, such as, besides calling Choo-Choo her only friend, she has a pencil box full of what looks to be at least about a dozen snails who she's named, like, Juliet and other such things.
That was funny. That was pure comedy. This show sometimes doesn't have too much comedy, and that was definitely on purpose, because she says the names very fast and very matter of fact, and I wish I could remember it, but like, I don't know, it will just say Juliet Romeo. She's like, Giulietto Romeo, and this and that. It was very funny, whatever those names were, just not your typical names for for snails.
And then, of course, Nanami tries to hide a snake in her desk, but it turns out that actually there is a mongoose named Mr. Mongoose that lives in that desk, and he is hungry, so he wanted to eat that snake. Mm-hmm. So he also lives there. And then she decides to hide a octopus in the closet and opens the closet to find a giant octopus that we find out is actually just a balloon from a recent festival that Anthy could not bring herself to throw away, so she keeps it hidden in her closet.
The octopus that Nanami had was not just any octopus. It was a very well animated octopus.
Yes.
There were very more smooth frames of animation of it just wiggling back and forth than there were for most of episode 4.
Right.
But I guess yes, go ahead.
It was impressive. That animation was great, and it's that's a choice for wanting to focus on that more than anything
else. It
was
a choice. But I think we should definitely look at one of the key points of this episode was Miki.
Yes.
Or Miki Kaoru, the blue-haired piano boy, mm-hmm. Who may have made an appearance in Marmalade Boy as Kay, who had feelings for Miki, the main character. Or also similarities to Kaoru, who also plays piano in Evangelion. There's so many cross relationships to other series. I'm not sure what this character is.
He's an amalgamation of all of the sweet anime boys who've come before him. But his story, I think, is much more fleshed out when we talk about the second episode. So let's go over that, and then we'll go over everything with Miki and everything. So again, I'm sorry to put so much work on you, but could you tell us what happened in finale of The Sunlit Garden?
In the tune Anthy just casually played, Miki found a glow, that certain glow, that he had been seeking. He has a twin sister, Kozue, who used to play a tune with a glow. However, she does not play the piano anymore. Miki wishes to protect Anthy's glow in her tune. However, Anthy tells him that because she is the Rose Bride, by the Rose Signet Code, she must obey the victor of the duel, or Utena, at the moment. She even says that if Utena told her not to play the piano anymore, she would not. Since he thinks it is his own fault that he lost Kazue's glow in the past, he does not want to lose a glow again. So Miki challenges Utena to a duel and tries to set Anthy free and protect her with his own hands.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This episode has a different set of crew that worked on it. It was storyboarded by Hiroshi Nishikiori, who did Angelic Lair, Azumanga Daioh, Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, Outlaw Star, amongst others. It was directed by Shingo Kaneko, who was the director for the original Fullmetal Alchemist series, did direction for Laid Back Camp, Ouran High Host Club, Samurai Pizza Cats, Soul Eater, Slam Dunk, just all over the board, many different shows.
Yes.
Again, written by Yoji Enokido, and animation supervisor by Masahiro Aizawa, who was the key animator and chief animation director of Digimon Movie 3. He was a key animator on Ergo Proxy, key animator for Gao Gaigar, chief animation director for the Hellgirl TV series, Penguin Drum, and multiple Pokemon movies.
Wow. At least they had the same writer for the episodes to link them together, because if not, they would have felt jarringly different. And I didn't really feel that when we watched it, so someone did a good job.
Absolutely. let's talk about Miki, because he is a sweet piano boy who, at the start of this two-parter, we start in media res, where they're in the middle of a duel, but then we flash back to him interacting with Utena and Anthy. At one point, it's asked, like, oh, are you ever going to, you know, do a duel sort of thing? And he says, no, I have no such reason to ever do things like that. Just because I'm part of the student council doesn't mean that I'm going to take part in anything of that sort.
Right.
Which we know from the beginning of this episode, he absolutely will. He is obsessed with this glow that he cannot reach, or as the subtitles from what we were watching, that shining thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I suppose, that magical spark, that feeling that he had when he played piano with his twin sister, who does not play the piano anymore. And they had written a song together called The Sunlit Garden. Can't seem to find the way to finish it without her help, but Anthy can play it just fine.
That glow that he's talking about, you know the glow he's referencing, right? That glow such as in the piano anime.
It's from
anime.
The Last Dragon, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the piano anime I was thinking of. Also known as Your Lie in April.
Ah, a thing that I have not seen.
Ah, well, there is, there's actually a really, there's a couple of really great scenes in Your Lie in April when the main character, forgive me, the name definitely escapes my brain at this moment, when he's playing the piano, the entire hall will be filled with light, or there will be certain visual, like, sensation linked to the music, and certain scenes, it's more prominent than others where, they do a really good job with that. So I'm wondering if that's what our boy Mickey here was looking for, or if he was just longing for the past of playing piano with his twin sister.
So, as I had mentioned before, I read a couple of blogs that are, you know, that went over these episodes because these people that I read are very smart and have really great insights, and it's good to feed off of that. One of them had specifically talked about it being the nostalgia of childhood that we can't ever get back again, which is very...
Oh.
True and depressing. I mean, just because it's their interpretation doesn't mean it's the correct one. But you had, you know, mentioned that, and it definitely seems like it. There's always these sepia tone flashbacks of him with his sister,
right?
To kind of like give this wonderful time, just a magical air. And another thing that's pointed out is that while in the intro to the series, whenever we see that flashback of Utena with the prince, they are of course just silhouettes with, you know, hair and clothing and things representing them. But this is the first time in the series proper that during a flashback we see Miki and Kozue as these silhouettes, not just for the sentimental parts, but also explaining why she doesn't play piano anymore. And they had pointed out a very interesting thing that when Miki first sees Anthy playing the piano, it kind of fades into that same sepia tone nostalgia, and she becomes a silhouette as well. It's just her hair and her clothes and a black silhouette, to the point where, like, her face is entirely obscured. You can't see. So it's kind of like imprinting, she is the same as my sister was. She has the shining thing and things like that. It's,
the only shining thing that Anthy has is this ball of light that forms at her chest and swords come out of it. So I'm not sure exactly.
Has the shining thing.
She literally has the shining thing. There's a lot of shining things in these episodes, from the ring blinding Utena to shining balls of light at Anthy's chest, to the nostalgic glow of my childhood. There's a lot of shining things, that certain glow, the emanating power.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in your notes specifically from this episode that you want to address?
All of them.
All of them. Okay.
Twin sister reveal. More social anxiety, because the sister has social anxiety, and that's why she stopped playing piano. Spoiler. Miki wants to disband the student council, but they only care about smashing the world shell for revolutionary power. So there's actually a really interesting scene earlier on in the episode where Miki doesn't really seem like he fits in with the student council. And it seems more that he just doesn't... I mean, maybe he's receiving letters from End of World. I mean, who knows? Maybe he just, like, shredded it or burned it. Maybe he lost it on the way to school. I mean, who knows? But he doesn't seem to care as much about it, because he does talk about disbanding it. And there was like a little bit of, I feel like there was like a pause or a moment, but they just kind of skipped past him knowing that he was worthless to begin with. And, you know, they're just obsessed with revolutionary power.
Right. Can I bring something up again?
Oh, yes.
So these wonderful, wonderful people. I'm so sorry. I don't remember the name of the person offhand that wrote this. It's a person named Vry Kaiser, who is writing about Utena, or had written about it. This was, 2014, so 7 years ago.
Thank you, Vry.
Yeah, thank you for your wonderful, wonderful insights. But Miki is the youngest of everybody at the student council. Everybody else is about 2 years older than him, I think. Sionji might just be a year older. But anyway, he is the youngest, and it's very clear that he doesn't really have a solid outlook on things. He's still growing and still maturing, because that moment where he brings up that we should disband the student council is from just a previous scene where Utena brings that up. And he actually parrots every talking point that she made during that to the student council. And so that it seems like, okay, he doesn't have his own original ideas there. And then later, when he meets Toga, who he walked in on, apparently doing very vulgar things with his twin sister, Toga has things to say about power and the reasons for the things that they do, and, you know, to basically grasp what you want and you know, otherwise you might lose it. Then Mickey turns around and says those exact same things to Utena, and that's why he's challenging her to a duel for Anthy. Ah,
so he's easily impressionable. Is what
yes.
You are saying.
Yes,
see,
exactly.
My notes during that scene where was it Toga was talking to him, where clothes are coming undone. Oh, no.
The sound you made when he walked in and saw Toga with his shirt off, you're like, oh, he's got his shirt off. I was like, yep. And also, when his sister walked out, her tie was undone. You're just,
oh, no. I, for some reason, didn't catch that part. but I definitely noticed when Alan Shazar was just leaning against a piano, like buttoning up his shirt.
Toga is... just he oozes creepo sex appeal, but you know, he's just Toga.
You make him wonder, but yeah, that's a good point about how impressionable he is. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite pick up on the fact that he had been repeating lines or repeating certain tone or different dialogue that he had picked up from them before, but that makes sense.
Yes,
that's a really good observation there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so thank you, Vry, for all of these great things. I'm stealing everything that you ever wrote because it's so good, and I want other people to hear it. But
if I had a blog like Vry, it would be more like a poem where it would say, twin sister reveal, more social anxiety. Disband the student council. Clothes are coming undone. Anthy, so strong in the belief of being the rose bride and doing what Utena says. Mm-hmm. Prediction, Mickey will take down the student council.
We gotta put that on the board.
Yeah.
That might be a thing that we have to address later.
There's a lot on the board.
There's so many things on the board, Jared. I wrote them all down, so we'll get there.
It's like a game show. This is like our own game show. We should do like an Utena game show event at a convention someday.
Well, trivia. 25th anniversary is coming up. We'll have to figure it out.
Oh.
I have a couple of commentaries here from the director, if you don't mind. This might serve to give us more things to talk about here.
I hope just commentary about the clothes coming undone.
That is all it is. Many okay. paragraphs about it.
Wow.
The Sunlit Garden Prelude. The Sunlit Garden is a song about the world you can never get back, the nostalgic world you can never return to again. Its true meaning will become clear during the climax of the series. I made such a radical departure in the second half of this that you might well ask yourself, is this the same show? I did it to solidify the positions of Nanami's and Anthy's characters, but by the storyboarding stage, Anthy was becoming even more of a mysterious girl. Meanwhile, Nanami became more of an entertaining girl. Is that all right? Sure, it's all right. I decided to update according to the rule, never give a character only one personality. I didn't want to reject fun on the grounds of, I can't get this character to be uniformly consistent. Which I think is a good philosophy to have. You don't want to have stiff, cardboard, one-dimensional characters. If there's something that might be fun for this character to do, and it might be a little out of what they're... out of character, just go for it anyway. It'll round them out more, and we don't all just stick to a script, you know?
That's right. In one scene, Nanami has easygoing eyes, and in another scene, she has crazy evil eyes. She is two-dimensional.
Yes, or three-dimensional, which would be even better.
Oh, my.
The Sunlit Garden finale. Around this time in production, I read an interview with a certain pair of pop idols in a magazine I was thumbing through at the store. Our motto is, get a hold of eternity. It's a brilliantly glittering thing. I was a little surprised. Get a hold of eternity was such an abstract phrase, and yet for some reason, I readily accepted it. It was as if, from that single phrase, I could indirectly sense the details that shaped their personalities. The look of the place where they grew up. What they saw of current affairs on the TV shows. The manga, anime, and popular songs that affected them. Call it the empathy between contemporaries, I guess. When I brought it up with Enokido, who was doing the screenplays, he was on board. Up until that point, we'd spent a lot of time arguing in the abstract about the spirit of the show, but I felt like it was a few words from these pop idols that got us to the heart of the matter. At the same time, the process of producing this two-parter set of episodes brought home to me again that Utena is a story about the relationships between characters. When you get right down to it, this series is a story about the relationship between Utena and Anthy, so I decided to apply that same style to the stories of the supporting characters too. From then on, I would be very conscious of Get Hold of Eternity and A Story About Relationships as key motifs of the show. So this man producing this wonderful anime series is spending his free time thumbing through Pop Idol magazines at what I assume is a convenience store. and it's inspiring him, which I think is so great. This man is unabashedly who he is. And it's so good that, you know, he embraces such things.
It makes more sense now. We're watching a Pop Idol anime. So this is it.
We've already got music. They're playing piano.
I hope there's going to be an episode of like a student, what would you call it? Like a, not like a homecoming,
a festival,
a student festival day where the student council has to sing. There better be an episode like that. And there better be a beach episode too.
Ooh.
But at this point, anything is game.
Of course.
Yeah, that's interesting. Eternity and all of these things. I just feel like what he did is he thumbed through these Pop Idol magazines and other literature of the time and started to get ideas for the music that plays when they go up the staircase. Calamity.
Right. Empathy. Absolute Destiny Apocalypse.
Absolute Destiny Apocalypse. Yes. so, but yeah, the point that you made about this relationship of Anthy and Utena. It's funny, we haven't really talked about Anthony. I keep calling her Anthony.
It's a strange name, so I don't...
I want to say Anshi. You know, Anshi makes sense, right?
You could do that.
Anshi. Anshi. Is it Himemiya? Is that the last name?
Yes, Himemiya, yeah. I believe.
But Anshi is... We didn't really talk about her a lot tonight, but I do think that... There was some really striking moments with her in episode 5 where when I said my little note here that she is so strong in her belief of being the Rose Bride and doing what Utena says. Now, that line alone doesn't really imply much of my actual thought, which is, I don't want to say that she's brainwashed, but I think that she, like, what is her backstory, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what is... She's, what, 15, 16 years old?
I believe they're both, her and Utena are both 14.
14 years old. So she's 14 years old. Has she only known this life of being, like, in a competition to be the Rose Bride? Or is this, like, a brand new thing for her that's only existed for a few months or something before, you know, the series started? But mm-hmm. She can call upon the power of Dios. There is even a line, I'm not sure if it was in this episode, but she calls upon the power of Dios, and she's do you remember what exactly she says? Like, she's the master of the power, or listen to me, power of Dios. She says something in particular that that shows that, like, she's very aware of this. And, you know, does she just know everything about, you know, this prince thing and what's going on? Or is she just like a symbol of power that people are kind of going after? Is Anthy even real?
I like that all of these questions are buzzing in your brain, because it is very mysterious that we haven't gotten any information out of this, or that, you know, just living alone with her, that Utena hasn't been like, so you talk about all this stuff, can you tell me what is going on? Because clearly you're keyed in and I am not. So please, what is happening? But yes, it's a very, you know, definitely one of these central things of the show is, so what's Anthy's deal? know, what happened? What is her backstory? And what is the situation we're really in?
Right.
So I'm glad that you were paying attention, as I think that's very important. And I will say, without spoilers, this is very interesting for me to watch, knowing where things go. I mean, like, okay, that's interesting. So I will do my best to not say anything or make any sort of indication one way or another when you are making predictions or while we're watching the show, of like, okay, well, I don't want to sway you one way or another. I just want to continue to say it's a mystery, and we'll get there together.
It's definitely a mystery. I guess one thing we did not talk about with this episode is that near the end, Miki does lose.
Yes.
He loses because Anthy is very enthusiastically supporting Utena in the battle. The duel at the top of the spiral staircase stadium that came out of the ground because water made that happen. And then the castle came out of the sky. Castle in the Sky, coming to theaters soon. As part of an anniversary release by G-Kids, not sponsored.
Yeah.
but there was definitely a moment there where I felt kind of bad for him because out of all of these people that are part of this very strange student council, he had the most innocence, right?
Yeah.
And he unfortunately lost because he got distracted in that moment where he was not the one that was being supported. But you know, he loses, and then at the end of the episode, it seems like, you know, the reason why I put down prediction, Mickey will take down the student council, is because I feel like he's going to be at least friendly to Utena and Anthy going forward. So, yes,
right.
He's having a little bit of a development, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you had brought up that he lost because in the moment he was distracted, because we are shown that he is fencing with another member of the student council, Jiri, who we'll get to meet fairly soon more in depth. But they both participate in fencing competitions at the national level. So they are very well-accomplished sword fighters against Utena, who has no formal training. But yes, he loses his resolve for a moment when Anthy openly cheers for Utena to win, which is not something that she'd done in the Sionji battle. She was completely silent and said nothing about who should win or who should lose. But yes, they seem to continue to be friends even after this duel. It was all just, you know, a thing in a heat of the moment
now,
sort of thing.
You say that Utena has no formal training, though she fights as if she may have training. I wonder, is it a part of her mysterious past?
We don't know. I mean, she wants to be a prince. Princes use swords. Maybe she's had some sword training.
She's just a natural, like every anime character out there.
Right. Well, I mean, she's great at basketball, and they wanted her to join the team. So she's just naturally athletic, I guess.
Seems that way.
Absolutely. is there anything else you want to say before I turn things back to our predictions?
Oh, no. I think we should go right into predictions.
Okay, great. You, these are from the last episode where we talked about episodes 1 and 2.
Oh, boy.
You seem to be very centered around end of the world, as you should, as this has only been mentioned
it's
a few
Kingdom
times.
Kingdom Hearts. It's like Kingdom Hearts. It's like Kingdom Hearts labels, you know, like end
I mean,
of world. And
there
Anson.
Literally,
I don't know.
There literally is a place in the first Kingdom Hearts game. It's at the very end. It's a place called End of the World. So you're correct.
That's where I got it from. Yes. Yes.
You had postulated perhaps Choo Choo is End of the World.
Well,
we're going to keep that on the board because we need to keep that for when we get to any sort of revelations about Choo Choo or End of the World.
You know, now that we have that on the board, I feel like more that Choo Choo is more of just a really sad friend to Anthy, and that Anthy didn't have any friends ever, either growing up or in current days. So I feel like there's something sad about Choo Choo.
Ooh, but, do you want to change that then? He's no longer possibly an end-of-the-world contender. Okay.
No, Choo-Choo is end-of-world.
Okay. Well, the next one is the puppetry girls. You say, is it one person? Is it a woman? Are they end-of-the-world? You're kind of throwing out any character you spot that is slightly mysterious. Oh, that's them. That's their end-of-the-world.
Well, it's either the characters we've met so far, or it is a prince that we have not met who is locked up in the castle sending letters down.
You also say that End of the World, who is sending letters like the Dead Sea Scrolls to predict events, you say that they all receive these letters. Who is the puppet master? Are they a child? Because of, you know, just the very some things of what have you. I don't remember exactly what it is. I listened to last episode and wrote that you said, are they a child? So I'm like, okay, well.
They sound like it. But then again, with anime voice actors, it's probably like a 50-year-old headmaster. It's the headmaster. Honestly, it sounds like it's one or possibly two people who are doing these weird silhouette puppetry things. And each time we see this, which is, as far as I can tell, once an episode so far, it's as if they are recounting a piece of a fairy tale or life events or something that are separate from like what we're seeing in like these scenes, but they're relevant, right? So
they're
every
parallel.
Time, right. And it makes me think is at one point you had made a comment that it's almost as if some of these scenes are like a stage play with the lighting and some of the other things. And I feel like someone's pulling the strings here. So there's a puppet master out there who's having too much fun, but that seems like too much of a simple answer. Like, this can't be the mind of a child doing this. Like, someone has to be writing those letters, and I don't think it's a child.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to put up on the board for next time and future things that Miki takes down the student council. So we'll put that up there.
I think he's either going to leave the student council and join the very large dormitory that's very empty with Anthony and Utena.
And or the giant octopus balloon. We can't forget that.
Yes, yes. That's where he'll stay. but, you know, I keep on hoping that this series... Well, this is where my anime mind wants to go. Is I'm hoping it gets really dark and they just take Miki and throw him off the top of that platform and he falls. Like, I'm waiting for something devastating to happen. Like, oh, we didn't expect that. But it hasn't happened yet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all pretty lighthearted. But I for some reason, I have this feeling that things are going to get wild, and I cannot wait to see. And if they don't get as wild as I'm thinking, that's okay. I'm hoping just, you know, for a few different twists and turns and a random death here or there. Well, I want them all to die.
Oh, no. No, I'm just kidding. Well, then we'll just have to keep chugging along and find out where things go. So I think we'll wrap up this episode with that. Yes. Thank you to everybody for listening. Jared, thank you for being here to go over the show with me.
Well, thank you for hosting and putting together these beautiful outlines that we follow. Without you, we would just have my notes such as epic slap scene and snails have a home and clothes are coming undone. I mean, that would also work.
Of course. Again, this is still only the beginning. We're only 5 episodes deep into this 39 episode series. We have so much more for you. If you're listening after this whole podcast is over, binge it. Enjoy it. Tell your friends about it. It'll be a good time. We've got you covered. Thank you to sponsors for this show, if we happen to have any. Jared, is there anything you would like to plug or tell people where they can find you?
I am Hot Anime Vlogger. You can find me through Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. There might be more, but that's the only ones that probably matter.
MySpace.
MySpace. Hot Anime Vlogger. I think that was already taken. But you can find me there. Where can we find you, Randy?
You can find me in places like at Saver_Breaker on Twitter. I think also Instagram. I just don't post there very much. I live on Twitter. You can also check out my other podcast, which is We Got a Podcast, Dragon Ball from A to Z, with my buddy Doug at Drabaz. He is a cool dude, and we talk about Dragon Ball, of course, which is totally different than Utena, but it's a good time. And if you guys
talk about Dragon Ball a lot more than we talk about in this podcast.
Absolutely, we do.
But at least ours has duels and fighting.
That's true.
Just like the Cell games.
We Got a Podcast does not have any Absolute Destiny apocalypses so far. So again, thank you. Please subscribe to the show, tell your friends, post a review. It helps us out more than you'll ever know. And stay safe out there, get vaccinated. Do it for you, do it for your friends, do it for your family, and have a good time. Theme song Zettai Unmei Moko Shiroku, provided by Astrophysics. You can find their music on Bandcamp and YouTube, or follow them on Twitter at AstroSynth.